Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Sullis. Retrofitting and sustainability are the future of construction. Visit sullis.ie/greenskills to find your course.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1.
Sarah McAvinchie is heading for major surgery in 2023 and she welcomes it. Her family carries the BRCA1 gene and Sarah has known for a long time that a preventable double mastectomy might be necessary. She's already had one round of surgery, gastric band surgery, to help her reach her target weight. And the next step then is this big operation, which she's going to tell us about now. Sarah, good morning to you. You're very welcome.
Morning.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me in.
How does it feel looking into the new year and this big, big moment is coming for you?
It feels really good, I'm not going to lie. It's all a bit scary, but very positive. The entire journey I've been on has been to advocate for myself, to look after myself, and I'm finally getting this double mastectomy, which is going to hopefully prevent me from getting breast cancer. So it's all positive.
And
all
you're in this situation because you have a genetic predisposition to this cancer. So maybe tell us a little bit about the background to that.
Absolutely. So it's the BRCA1 gene mutation. So we found out it was in the family when my mum was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2006. So I was 13. And we found out soon enough after that it was, as I said, the genetic mutation. So all of her siblings got tested. So she's one of seven, and six of those seven all carried the mutation. So the whole 50-50 chance wasn't really in her favour at that point. And obviously then, as her daughter, I was at risk of having that gene mutation. But I had to wait until I was 18 to get tested. So it was a long few years of, you know, waiting and figuring all of that out. Mm-hmm. I was 18 then, I finally got my genetic testing done and I am a carrier of the mutation. So it basically means that it's I have a 55 to 60% chance of developing ovarian cancer and an 80 to 85% chance of developing breast cancer. Wow. So crazy high. You know, I mean, if someone said, would you get into a plane if you had an 85% chance of going down, you wouldn't go near the thing. So,
and how long ago is it since you got those results and you got those odds?
11 years ago. I was 18. And, you know, immediately I wanted to get prophylactic preventative surgery, like all my aunties had done, like my mum had done with a hysterectomy. And of course, I was only 18. The doctors were like, you're far too young, your body's still developing. And to be honest, mentally, I probably wasn't in the right place to get it done. So I went to university, did my thing there, kind of threw myself into fundraising and actively raising awareness as kind of my coping mechanism, I suppose. And then I was kind of 24 and I said, right, okay, I'm ready to get this done. Went back in to the consultants, to the surgeons. And then I was told, oh no, you're too overweight to get this done. Your outcome wouldn't be right. It wouldn't be beneficial to you. So that was tough because I'd kind of psyched myself up for it. And I was told, you know, kind of go lose 5 stone and come back to us. And I was sitting there going, I have been chunky since I was about 2 years old. How am I going to lose 5 stone? I suffer from PCOS as well. So losing weight is really difficult for me.
It's polycystic ovarian.
So losing weight is really difficult. And I was like, right, I'll give it a go. And never got near the 5 stone mark. And then I went back in about 2 years ago.
Can I just stop you there? What did you put yourself through to lose weight?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's different. You know, you want to fit into something. You go on a diet. That's one thing. But being told you cannot have this potentially life-saving operation unless you lose 5 stone. What did you do to lose the 5 stone?
I did all of the good things and all of the bad things. And I'm talking about since I was literally 13, I've been at this mess. And so, you know, everything from eating well, exercising regularly, to eating, you know, too well in some cases, that I wasn't getting enough protein, wasn't getting enough nutrition, over-exercising, all of the fad diets, not eating at all, you know, then overeating, you know, at different times.
Low carb, keto.
keto, paleo, no sugar, no dairy. I tried it all. I tried all of the branded diets as well, that I was happily paying money to go every week and be told you've lost half a pound. And I was going, that is not what I'm supposed to be doing here. So I did everything. And as I said, I did all the wrong things and I did all the right things. And I still wasn't getting anywhere near that 5 stone.
So you decided then that you would have the gastric surgery done.
Yeah, well, I had to be persuaded. I won't lie. I went back to my breast surgeon and to the plastic surgeon and I said, look, I'll sign a waiver. I need to get these things out of me. I've always felt like my breasts and my body were a ticking time bomb, that I was just waiting to find that lump. I in the last 10 years, I found over 8 lumps that were cysts, lipomas. You know, they were all thankfully not dangerous. But every single time I was going, oh my God, is this it? Has it finally happened? Am I going to be like mom and having surgeries and chemo and radium and everything?
Mm-hmm. And she went through all of that while you were going through your teenage years.
All of that, yeah. So she was diagnosed on my first day of secondary school and her and dad forgot to collect me. I had to go home with my friend and I was like, how dare you? You know, the biggest day of my life. And they were like, yeah, so we just have to tell you something. So from I was like 13 to nearly 16, mom was going through all that treatment. Thankfully, she has made a full recovery. The woman is my absolute hero. But I really wanted to follow in her footsteps and get the preventative surgery done before I had to be treated.
You see, I'm forming a picture now of you on your first day in secondary school being hit with this, that your mother was diagnosed, then realising that you were likely to be in the same position.
Mm.
Then you get to 18, you find out you are probably going to be in all likelihood in the same position. Then being told you can't have the operation. Then being told, you know, you need to lose the 5 stone. Now we're at, you need to get this gastric band. That's going to be the way you're going to get there.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, absolutely not. You know, I've heard all these horror stories and I was basically saying, I'll sign a waiver. Whatever happens, happens. I just want my preventative surgery and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually then my surgeon was like, look, this is safe. It's a gastric bypass. She referred me on to the most amazing bariatric team. And I got the bypass then in April. And even right up to the day before going in, I was like, what am I doing? This is not something that I'm not going to say I didn't believe in it, but it's not something that I ever saw for myself. Being the size I was never an issue for me. It was when I was a teenager, but I kind of grew to love myself and to accept myself for who I am. And I never thought that there was, you know, anything inherently wrong with that. And then, of course, the bigger picture, 85% risk. You do what you need to do. And I am delighted to say that I have never looked back since my surgery in April. I was told I had to lose 5 stone a few years ago, and we went through COVID. There was a bit more weight put on, so I'm now 5.5 stone down. So I'm right where I need to be. And
so since April, since that surgery, you've lost 5.5 stone.
5.5, yeah. So, I mean, the whole process of the surgery is learning how to, you know, give yourself enough nutrition, putting exercise into your daily routine, basically being as healthy as possible. I just have a slightly smaller stomach than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beginning and the end of it. There's no, you know, magic fix. It's not an easy way out or anything like that. It was literally just a tool to help me get to where I need to be.
And what's it like losing all of that weight in such a short period of time? That's not just a physical thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure it has other impacts on you too, does it?
Absolutely. And I, you know, for the first couple of months, you know, the weight drops off quite quickly. And I did not notice a difference. Everybody else could see a difference in me. And I was like, oh, it's fine. You know, it's not important. I was so focused on getting this preventative surgery that I didn't really give myself a whole lot of time. But, you know, the last couple of months, I've kind of seen, you know, a bit more confidence in myself. I've really kind of, you know, found a bit more of that self-love that I didn't have for most of my adult life, most of my teenage life either. Like, I'm wearing jeans. I haven't worn jeans in 3 years. This is a great day for me, Claire. So it's great. And, you know, even with work and stuff like that, like, I have energy and I'm a much more positive outlook. I've always prided myself on being quite a positive person, but that's kind of increased tenfold since losing the weight as well.
So now you're over that hurdle.
Yes. Yeah.
You've got to face into the new year with this major surgery, but you're in a slightly unusual position because you have a support network around you of people who have been through this.
Yes, exactly. And it sounds strange to say that I'm very lucky, but my mum recovered from breast cancer. As I said, she's amazing, and I follow after her in every step of life. All my aunties had preventative prophylactic surgery, and they are so supportive. My friends who have been with me since, you know, I was 13 and I found out that mum was sick, they've been with me every step of the way since. And then my younger sister actually also found out there last year that she carries the gene mutation as well. So she's going to be undergoing the surgery also. We're wondering if we could just, like, you know, get boob jobs together and make it the ultimate sister week off. But we're all kind of in it together as a unit. So it is really nice to have
that
support.
So what happens next now? When is that surgery going to happen now that you're at the weight where you can go ahead?
Yeah, so I'm just waiting on a date I'm hoping in the first half of next year. As I said, it's just a waiting game when I can be kind of slotted in, and I'll get the surgery done. And I'm actually using abdominal tissue instead of silicone implants, so it's a little bit more natural, and there's less likely of risk of infection and things like that. So that's the surgery that I'm going to be going for. It's called a DEEP surgery, and hopefully I'll be getting it done, as I said, early next year. I'm just waiting on that date to come through.
This has, I would imagine, dominated your life in a certain way. Not entirely, I'm sure, but a big part of your life from, as I said, when you were 13. Mm. What has the impact been on relationships, for example?
I think relationships are a weird one because my boyfriend Joseph, I've been with him for 3 years, and as you can tell, I'm a bit of an oversharer. So it didn't take me long to start telling them about, you know, oh, by the way, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, you know, fertility, whatever. And bless him, he was kind of thrown in at the deep end. And our house is a very openly communicative house. So you'll hear us talk about, as I said, boobs and ovaries, whatever, at the dinner table, like it's nothing. Very strange, but that's just who we are. And he was kind of thrown into that. And he was probably my first relationship that was so openly accepting of it and was just sitting, willing to learn, and probably still learning. And he is 100%, you know, in my corner. Whatever surgeries I need to get done, whatever effect that will have on my body and our relationship going forward, he's 100% behind me. And I think I'm very lucky. I think that's quite rare, to get someone so openly supportive without even all the information. But, you know, previous relationships, it's been a bit strange and a bit of a challenge, but led me to where I am now. So I'm happy with that.
It's just such an unusual situation, you know, when you talk about the family gatherings where boobs and ovaries are the, you know, topic number one. Let's all get this out there.
Yeah, literally. And I think, you know, it's. You know, my family unit of my mum, my dad and my brother and my sister, but it extends out to my aunties and my uncles and my cousins, you know, where we can sit and, you know, see each other after 18 months of not seeing each other with COVID, and, you know, you're catching up and you're doing this, and they're like, yeah, so boob surgery, or who had the genetic test last, you know, of the next generation. I'm the oldest, and there's 6 of us out of 18 have gotten the test so far, and only one has tested negative. So it is going to be quite prevalent, we think, with the next generation. So keeping those lines of communication open is really important to me and to all of us, to make sure that it's not kind of, you know, forgotten. Oh, it was our mums that went through it, but it's over now. No, we have to keep the conversation going. We have to make sure everybody's comfortable talking about it and know that they have the same support network that I have.
But there's also an important message in there about testing, if there's a history in your family that you're aware of this type of cancer.
Yeah, 100%. As an Irish people, we're really fond of, you know, a bit of ostrich syndrome, and, you know, we don't want to necessarily face something like this that's so serious head on, because it is such a scary thing to think about. Cancer, everybody knows someone who's been, you know, affected by it. And then when you're talking about, as I say, boobs and ovaries, it's not exactly something that's easy to talk about. But I think if there is a family history, talk to your GP, see if you qualify for genetic testing. Not everybody does. It has to be an immediate family member that has been sick. But I suppose in the greater scheme, outside that, you know what your body feels like. You know, I'm talking about every person. Know what, you know, your boobs feel like, your testicles, what, you know, visually, if your body changes, tactile, if your body changes. Keep an eye on yourself. Advocate for yourself, because no one else is going to. And if something feels weird, it's not embarrassing to go to your GP and say, I have a bit of a lump, or I have a bit of, you know, puckering or whatever it may be. The GP doesn't want you to sit at home and not come into them. They want to look after you. You know, they want to refer you on to get tested or get scanned if you need to. People want to help. So don't be afraid. Don't be embarrassed. I think by your own body is the main thing that I've learned.
I know that that's one of the reasons why, and you spoke to the Irish Independent, to Elaine Keogh, and you're speaking to us today. You just want people to know that the testing is available there to you, to go out and avail of it if you have an immediate history of cancer in your family. So are you frightened about the prospect of next year? I mean, you've been waiting for this for so long.
Yeah.
What do you feel about it?
I'm not scared of surgery. I'm more scared of getting breast cancer, to be honest with you. It is something that I've been scared of getting since I was 13. And I am so over it. I'm so over the anxiety that it brings, the fear that it causes. Every time, as I say, I get a new lump or something, I'm like, this is it. This is, you know, and mom, you know, got treatment and recovered. But I think a good instinct when you think about cancer is still a death sentence, and you don't automatically go, oh, I'll have treatment and get better. You know, you think, oh, I'm going to get breast cancer and I'm going to die.
An awful lot of people do recover though now. We heard about those survival rates, that they've improved so much. But I know what you
mean.
Massively
so.
Instinctively, you probably think the worst.
Exactly.
The other thing I know you wanted to mention, Sarah, was that while the health service is really good when you're in it, some people struggle to get access. And you have private health insurance.
Yes.
That's right, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's, you know, it's as you say, when you're in the health system, you can be looked after really, really well. It's getting in, getting those first appointments, those first biopsies. I am very lucky. We have family private insurance, and a mum was told, you know, her cancer was so aggressive. She was told if she had been in the public waiting lines, she might not have survived her cancer. We are completely aware of how privileged we are that we have that insurance. But I would just love to see a slightly more accessible kind of service for people like me, who I was, you know, 23 going in with a lump, and a lot of, you know, medical professionals were kind of laughing me out of it, going, you're 23, you don't have breast cancer, don't be ridiculous. And I was like, I have this gene, just trust me on this, I need to get tested. And I had to kind of fight to have my voice heard a little bit, even with the insurance behind me. So I would love to see, just, you know, for younger women, younger men who are going in, just to have that little bit easier access. That's all it is. It's just getting in the door.
Sarah, it's been lovely to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
And I'd love to talk to you again once you've had your operation.
Absolutely.
You might come back in when you're up to it. Sarah McAvinci there. And if you need any help with anything you might have heard, if you've been affected by anything in the conversation, because we touched on a lot there, information available from the Irish Cancer Society at cancer.ie, and you'll find more helplines on rte.ie/helplines. Sarah, thank you very much. Now, I just want to bring you some news just reaching us, as myself and Sarah were chatting. The Defence Forces have released a statement. They say they can confirm the names of the individuals involved in this morning's incident while serving with the United Nations Interim Force in Lebanon. Killed on active service, Private Sean Rooney. Private Rooney joined the Defence Forces in March of 2019. His home unit is the 27th Infantry Battalion in Dundalk. He previously served overseas with the 119th Infantry Battalion UNIFIL. Private Rooney was 23 years of age and a new native of Newtown Cunningham in County Donegal. The private who was injured is Shane Carney, and he joined the Defence Forces in October of 2018. His home unit is 1 Cavalry Squadron in Collins Barracks in Cork. He previously served overseas too. He's 22 years of age and a native of Killy in County Cork. That's Private Sean Rooney, who died in active service, and Private Shane Carney, who was injured on active service. And may Private Rooney rest in peace. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.